Hello, all you Bills, Phils, Nannies, and Does out there, and welcome to another episode of the Mount Biltmore Cliff Dive Podcast, where, like always, every week, we're chasing greatness. This week, though, greatness is synonymous with change, and as longtime listeners may already be aware of, Cody is not doing the introduction. In fact, Cody is not here. Now, don't be alarmed. Cody will certainly be back next week and every week after that, but we have in his place this week someone we are very happy to introduce to you guys, both of our best friends, and who is going to be the third co-host. That's right. We're going to have three from here on out. LaRon Biltmore. LaRon, how you doing, bro?
man, I'm feeling good. It feels good to be in the studio, hypothetically, with you guys. I'm really excited to be talking about our topic today. Cam, what are we getting into today?
In the studio, bro, that's topical right there. We are talking about the greatest conscious rappers or rap groups of all time. So in the studio, it's very, 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 what's the word, relevant. I kept saying very because I was looking for that word. But yes, groups and rappers in general, conscious rap. We thought with LaRon's introduction, this could be a really fun and interesting topic to cover with you guys. And man, it has been for me a challenge to really come up with a list. And I want to point out especially that I had a conversation with my dad just a couple hours ago, and he kind of put some of my choices flat on their face and made me think of some of the old timers who at least all of them will make my honorable mention. How are you feeling about yours?
Yeah, it's same. It, you know, we grew up, we were both born in 91. So, you know, we were kids when some of this ideas, these themes of conscious rap were being introduced and kind of really coming into the mold. So the first thing I had to do is think about, well, you know, what do we really mean when we say conscious rapper? When you talk to other people, did they kind of understand the concept? What did you have trouble with that?
I feel like most hip hop heads and rap fans, I didn't talk to too many people, but most people kind of have an idea what it means. But I do think that there are artists on the list that we're going to read, and just in general, who don't really fit into the mold. And if I have an opinion on why that is, it's because sometimes these artists, and one of them who fell off my list, not because of a lack of their greatness, but because they're not a conscious rapper. They are, and part of conscious rappers in general is that it was something that other people put on these rappers, and something that some rappers took up and are so strongly, the way that they do their music so strongly fits into it, either because of their influences or because of a conscious decision to do so, or it's because people just see them that way.
Right, and right.
Some of them are, some of the ones that had to drop for me are people that, well, Kanye West is an example. I thought about him for a second.
And even I was wondering if you'd have him on his list.
No, he's not on my list. Even at his most sort of consciously, or your word, we talked about this, you asked, at his most woke, early in his career, I think that his focus was more on painting a picture and not on painting a picture that says something. And maybe that's what it is to me. Conscious rappers almost always have a message. Sometimes it becomes a little too didactic, and sometimes it's perfect. And I guess we'll get into that. Or how do you feel, actually, before we get into it?
Yeah, I had to look it up, because when you say conscious rapper, you know the idea of what you're getting at. And what I found was similar to what you said. There's not any rapper that's out there that's going to say, like, oh, you know, I got into the game because I wanted to be a conscious rapper. It's just about kind of the intent. Has a lot to do with it. And that's what I found. And when I was explaining it to some of the people that I talked to, like, okay, I got what you're saying. But yeah, it was really interesting kind of looking and trying to differentiate between some of the rappers that have kind of, you know, been on that line of put out a lot of songs that are, you know, conscientious, but not necessarily, that's not their body of work. So,
well, and I think there's a dichotomy between rappers that really started to rear its head in the 90s. And I guess in the late 80s as well, but that dichotomy might have been what really created the conscious rapper. And I think in the 90s, you get three types of rappers. You get your party rappers, your gangster rappers, and your conscious rappers. And a lot of rappers fit into all three of those, but most of them are thrown into one basket or another. in the 80s, actually, you know, NWA is, they were a conscious gangster rap group, and as probably the most influential gangster rappers of all time. That's interesting to think about, but I do think that we can make some pretty solid claims on who is or who isn't. But in that note, let's go ahead and start the list. The first one, the people's champ, as always, Ranker, the best conscious rappers. We may be the people's choice, but Ranker's the people's champ because the people vote. You don't get to vote here. This is us. All right. Number seven on their list is KRS-One. He's a legend.
Yeah, man. I had not heard of him at all.
And oh, then, my God.
So I had to look up his songs. And, you know, he's a guy that I think of, like, just started freestyling. And then it's like, let's just put a beat to this. And right. I'm just out here teaching these kids, mm-hmm. you know.
He's one of those straight, the teacher. And one thing I wanted to get on, I don't know if any of my particular choices will, but if you look at the history of political hip hop and rap in general, the 5%er Nation, which was like an offshoot of Islam in the 60s, has a huge hand in hip. They go hand in hand with hip hop. A lot of where the politics come from are these 5%er ideals, which are really important to understand, and because it explains not only where they're coming from, but why. The same reason that the 5%er Nation was invented is the reason that these guys are rapping about these topics. So I would really recommend anybody listening to this to look up the 5%er Nation and what they stand for. It's interesting. I'm not going to say anything good or bad about anybody's religion. It's definitely interesting, though. And it is at the heart of especially New York 90s hip hop. And a lot of it today, J Electronica spit some of the hardest verses over the past 15 years. And he's a pure 5%er. So number six, Filoni.
Filoni's another one that I wasn't really aware of either.
Yeah, I'm not really aware of him. I don't even, as far, especially on Ranker, I think it's weird that he's this high, but he is. So, wait.
Yeah.
No, now I feel bad because Filoni is a woman. Maybe it's us. It says that Filoni started in 2007, has had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 albums, and none of them, or maybe 5 albums. And none of them have a Wikipedia page. So we shouldn't feel too bad about not knowing about. And I guess it must be Felony. I'm assuming that's how it's pronounced.
That Felony, makes more sense.
Yeah, we'll make more effort to listen to you in the future. Thank you for your work. Number five, Yasiin Bey, formerly known as Mos Def.
Yeah. Hey, this dude can flow. I really like it. He was on my honorable mention. He didn't crack my list, but when I just turned him on, he was the first guy I was like, okay, this dude is talking about something and is also making me vibe.
Right. Yeah, Mos Def, an interesting dude. I've always been a fan of him, or at least as long as I've known about him. Rapper, actor. He's actually been an actor as longer than he's been a rapper. Right. And member of one of the groups that could have easily made my list but didn't, Black Star. Much love for Mos Def. Great rapper. And I think he has one of the best ears for hip-hop music ever. Just his tracks, nobody sounds like his, especially later albums. Black on Both Sides is a masterpiece, but I love the way he took his music in the later ones. Definitely. Next on this list is Lauryn Hill.
Yeah, shout out to, you know, this is Cody's girl.
Cody and Matt Bang's cat.
Love them some Lauryn Hill.
Lauryn Hill may have made, to me, it's hard to Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, at the least, is one of the Mount Goatmore conscious hip hop albums, if not one of the Mount Goatmore hip hop albums ever. Certainly, in my opinion, the best hip hop album ever from a female. And maybe we shouldn't have to make that distinction, but females have been left out of rap for a long time until today, really. And even today, none of them are Lauryn Hill. Nobody's like Lauryn Hill today.
And you gotta, it took me a second to remember that she was a rapper because, you know, I think she's most famously known, you know, for her singing and, you know, the Sister Act 2, I think it is. I don't know if she's in the first one.
No, it's just two. And the Fugees, you know, the group, they have, she's not on my list. I guess I'll say it right now. She's probably the highest honorable mention just because the Fugees have two albums and she has one. And I think a lot of the others I put in this list have just done so much more for the culture of conscious hip hop that as great as her albums are, I can firmly put them above her. Yeah. For me. Number three, Andre 3000.
Again, another shout out. This is probably Cody's favorite rapper.
He's not my favorite, but I think he may be the best rapper of all time. Best, not the greatest, but the best. But I'm not sure he's the conscious rapper. What do you think?
I was trying to think. I was like, what songs of his are conscious? Like, and I couldn't think of any. And especially, you know, he went, I won't say pop or mainstream, but he definitely, you know, has made a couple of songs that are on commercial, you know, the Shake It Like a Polaroid Picture
He's the original weirdo rapper. That's how I feel. Right. He's kind of weird, but he's also more like just the things that he touches on are like what an author might, or like he's Hemingway. He's rapper's version of George Hemingway or whatever his name is. Ernest Hemingway, George Hemingway. Who am I? Of Ernest Hemingway or something like that. And he sounds almost like he has one foot on spoken word poetry and one foot in hip hop. I think the topics he touches on are just like, this is who I am. When I was talking about earlier in the episode, people that I wanted to put on the list, but I'm not quite sure I would consider them conscious rap, I was talking about Andre 3000. I have a huge write-up of him right in front of my face right now that I was ready to say, but I don't think he's a conscious rapper. I think he's just a Southern rapper. If you have to put him in something, he's just a Southern rapper who's not a gangster rapper, but who's willing to touch any given topic. Maybe he is conscious. Maybe you Phil's, Bills, Nannies, and Does will tell us why he is, and we'd love to hear that, but he's not on my list, I hate to say.
Yeah, I think a big common theme with all the ones that I selected, I'm sure the ones that you're selected in, and really a lot on this other list, was this idea that, you know, there is some kind of message. There's an intentional message that's being said in the song, in the music. And all the songs that I remember of Andre 3000 are not like that.
Right. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think the way that he tells stories makes life seem more beautiful. But he's definitely not saying a message like number two, Tupac Shakur.
Who, right.
You know, he's maybe the prototypical 90s, or became the prototypical 90s conscious rapper. You want to talk about him?
Yeah, so I'll actually talk about him a little later. Oh. Wink, wink. But I will say that, you know, one thing that stands out about him is you have a lot of rappers in today's time talk about Tupac as a father figure, you know, mm-hmm. through, you know, not knowing their father and listening to Tupac's albums and listening to the things he said. Like, that right there is, you know, a picture perfect painting of what a conscious rapper would do and the impact that they would have. So yeah, Tupac definitely deserves to be up on there.
I'll talk about him too. He did not make my list for reasons, but he's certainly one of the most impactful rappers of all time, for sure.
Right.
Number one on this list is J. Cole.
J. Cole.
I feel like you're going to talk about him the way that you're.
Yeah. J. Cole, I was interested that in this list, he topped it over some of the more old school guys. But as we get into it, I'll kind of paint a picture of why I think that is. So yeah, we don't have to talk about him too much, but I mean, he's so talented. Like, the guy is so talented, can make music. One thing that I think was really impressive about him when he came out with some of his kind of like right before his prime, his albums, he made an intent not to do features. And so like he wanted to make a name for himself that like, this is me. But we'll talk about him a little later as well.
Cool. We have one more list. It is Hit the Floor's top 10 socially conscious rappers at number 8, Lupe Fiasco. Lupe's on my list. I could talk about Lupe for years.
I'm so glad he's on your list. He didn't make mine, but man, when I was listening, I was like, if we're just doing like my personal, like just my influence, Lupe, man, he's up there for me.
To me, Lupe might be the greatest rapper of all time. Maybe not the greatest, but no, maybe the greatest. He's only, as far as skill, to me, only Andre 3000 is even close to him. So we'll talk about that. Number seven, Dead Prez. I haven't listened to them much. Late 90s group, really militant, socially conscious. I gave them a couple tracks and nothing really, really piqued my interest in a way that might have put them on my list. And
I think, probably more of like what they stood for and their activism outside of their music, maybe. But again, I'm fine with them being on the list. They didn't crack my top four.
Well, this is an interesting list because number six on it is a British rapper, Akala, who I've never heard of. Maybe that's not how you say his name. And there's like two British choices on this list. To be honest, British rap feels so different than American rap, both in sound and just like they're speaking to different audiences in some ways, that it's hard for me to even consider. I'm happy that there's a British scene. I have no issue with that scene or anything like it, but I feel like it's a completely different scene. Like, it's different stuff.
Right. I didn't even really know rap outside of America was a thing. I mean, like when I was in college, and I don't know if you remember this, but there was the Worldwide Choppers song, where everybody's real fast, rapping real fast, and they've got people from different countries coming on there. That was my first kind of exposure to like, oh, well, yeah, rap is obviously going to extend to, other societies.
You know, the weird part is that the biggest non-American rap society right now is South Korea. Have you seen that?
No. So
the whole K-pop and that whole scene, a lot of it is rap, and they have a lot of like rap dance group that are getting really, really influential. Maybe not influential, but really, really popular in the States. So
if interesting.
I'll be on Twitter and I'll just click on some random phrase and it's some K-pop person and I just get angry and click off, but they're getting big. And so maybe we should do a British list, listen to some and do some. Number five is Mos Def, who we have already talked about.
Yeah.
Number four is Low Key. Do you know Low Key?
I don't really know much about Low Key.
Another British rapper.
Okay. Makes sense.
Number three, KRS-One. Number two, Public Enemy.
Yeah, Fight the Power.
Fight the Power. That's all you got to say with Public Enemy, right? I almost had them off my list. I guess that's a spoiler. They're on it because Flavor Flav is a fool, but they're Public Enemy. So I want to talk.
He kind of embodies that, like, you see maybe rappers in their prime and then they've been in the game too long or they've been in Hollywood too long, and it just messes with their head because the Flavor Flav. Oh, what's that TV show? It's Flavor of Love.
Flavor of Love, yeah. But he's such a weird dude too, because like he's the hype man, but Flavor Flav was like a musical prodigy growing up. He can like play all these instruments and stuff, but he's the cool hype man, or he was cool back in the '80s. That's influential. I think it's kind of important that you have the Flavor. Well, let's go on. I could talk about it more. Maybe I'll do that first on my list. Number one is Immortal Technique.
Yeah, this was a guy that I didn't know about, but I had to look up, and it was pretty interesting. I think like he was born into like being destined to be some kind of activist, or like that was the way that his life path was on. He was born a revolutionary, like literally being born in a Peruvian military hospital. Mm-hmm. Reading up about him, I didn't know about him, but looking at his stuff was pretty interesting.
I want to give all respect to guys like Immortal Technique, and these are like underground legends, right? Immortal Technique, Brother Ali, Idea, Dell the Funky Homo Sapien, Aesop Rock, all these legendary underground rappers who were really conscious, but most of them, their music does not speak to me that much. They're really, really skilled, and I hope more people will listen to them in general, but I think for me, the reason why I leave them off of my list is that the point of conscious hip-hop is to bring a higher consciousness to the people who listen. And the people who are listening to most of these guys are already, at that consciousness level. they're already thinking about these things. And so they're not the young people for the most part who need to hear these messages to be more thoughtful about what they do in their everyday life. They're older guys like us or teenagers who already think rap is crap or whatever. And so that sounds bad, like I'm condemning them, and I'm not. They're great rappers. They're great conscious rappers. But for me, they didn't make the list because I think their impact is lessened by the way that their music is consumed. I don't know. I might get crap for this. Who knows?
No, I think you make a good point, and I think it helps transition us into kind of the way that I approached my list, because I think you're right. So as we transition, I think it's a good point, because for me, the way that I looked at was that impact, that reach. So some of these guys, like if you listen to their stuff, they're straight up conscious. So if you want to define it in that way, like the sole purpose of their song or maybe even why they're making music is to make a point. But to me, like you said, what is the reach? And to me, that's how I defined like who is the greatest, like where's that reach? And then earlier we mentioned this idea of like wokeness. And so before we get into our list, I'd like to get your thoughts about, is there a difference to you between a conscious rapper and a woke rapper? How do you kind of view that, those two terms?
So this kind of goes back to the five percenters for me. The first time I heard that word woke was before it got picked up by the mainstream today as like a derogatory term, or like to describe how you feel. It was something that was used to say that you understand like this 5% truth. And I would hear it from older brothers at like the barbershop and stuff, like, oh, you ain't woke. And then it transformed into what it is today. And so I think the woke rappers today are trying to be like the conscious rappers of the 90s, but the conscious rappers of the 90s didn't call themselves woke. A lot of them, especially guys like Talib Kweli, they were just rappers. They were trying to do their thing. And it's the same idea with Andre 3000, except for I think most of them that I do consider conscious, what they were trying to do, that thing became, you know, political in nature or didactic in nature, as opposed to today where it's purely didactic. Political rap didn't really gain a stranglehold in the mainstream until 2017, when Black Lives Matter really, really blew up, which part of that is because Black Lives Matter grew up, but another part is because it became a bit more marketable. And I think it's interesting to think about what that means. I feel more like woke is a part of conscious rap, but not all conscious rap is woke rap. Because I feel like that word woke is wrapped up in today as opposed to yesterday.
Like, yeah, woke that's was, what said.
Woke was responsive. You know, if those 90s guys, they might say, oh, you ain't woke, but they didn't describe themselves as woke. Now they describe themselves as woke and other people describe them as the same. I think that's the difference for me.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I almost think kind of like being woke is kind of the embodiment of like what you said, the conscious rappers were trying to do. So it's almost like a transformation. Mm-hmm. And I think it's like what it looks like in today's time with today's rappers and the way that society is right now. And I think we'll talk a little bit about that as our list divulges, but I think the need for the rap and conscious rap has changed, you know, through time. Like, yeah. And there was a different need in the 80s and 90s than there is now. Same, still a great need, but just a different kind of need. So I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit, but I guess we can jump
really
in.
Weird. The 2000s is when it was the most weird because it was this post-prosperity. I think it was like a response. And conscious rap is, to me, always a response to something. In the 80s, it was the response to crazy amounts of violence in the hood and to police brutality. But in the 2000s, there was this post response to 9/11, how these community, like everything stopped for 9/11. Some communities were still not getting any type of help at all and were ignored. It's really interesting. We could talk on this a lot. What's your first choice?
Okay, so my first choice, and you know, I hope I don't upset any of you Bills, Fields, Nannies, and Does out there. So a lot of my list is modern, and I have specific reasons for why. But I think this is on your list too, Cam, so we can kind of tag team. But Public Enemy, to me, I had to give them respect. They're the one of kind of the old school rap that made my list just because of how iconic some of their music was. And when you think of Public Enemy, like we said, to jump off, Fight the Power. And that right there is, like, you know, this symbol of, you know, being Black in America and standing up against these adversaries and this oppression. There's no way I couldn't have them on my, they weren't on my list at first, but after I kept doing research and listening to their songs, it's like, you can't leave Public Enemy off your list.
Right. And, you know, even today, they're still releasing albums. They're still doing benefit concerts. At least Chuck D is. There was some controversy because Flavor Flav didn't want to do free concerts recently, which is more Flav. But I think you're right that, like, these songs are not just great rap songs that are political in nature. And even though that's what they are huge part. You can't understand these political movements in these communities without listening to Fight the Power or Welcome to the Terror Dome. These are some of the most important rap tracks of all time. And for instance, it's the backdrop for the movie Do the Right Thing, Fight the Power is. These tracks will stand the test of time. The thing with me, a lot of the ones I left out was because I didn't really, really love the music. And I'm not listening to Public Enemy the same way I listen to Kanye West.
Right.
Where it's like, it's about the beauty and the brilliance of it as much as it is the message. But I think that they hit so hard and so importantly that they can punch through that criteria for me. Because they are the most important political rap group ever. If we did a list based on that, they could have been the go-to-goats. If we had discussed this. If we had discussed this like 10 minutes before, we might have had to elevate them. And that's how important they are. So that's kind of an easy choice. I think the only track in rap history that compares to Fight the Power and Welcome to the Terror Dome and like its political importance is, and this is a honorable mention, Grandmaster Flash's The Message. Mm. And my dad told me I have to mention that, but that's another one of those tracks that for a whole generation sort of defined what they were fighting for. But yeah, Public Enemy's easy.
So we talked about the need and what was the need at the time. And I think if you think about, you know, part of rap is Black culture. And that's what something that Mos Def said in one of his songs. It talks about, like, you know, where's hip hop going? Where's the future of rap going? And he said, asked, where are we going as a community? And if you think about it, the history of Black America in this country, you know, they go from, okay, we're just happy to be free, to all of a sudden, like, no, we're not okay with this oppression. And you have people like, you know, Malcolm X and Martin Luther and all the people who were continued to fight for injustice. And then I think this kind of style of conscious rap took it to the people, took it to everybody in the sense of, like, yeah, I'm angry about the oppression that's going on, the police brutality, the things that's happened. The song they wrote, 911 is a joke. I mean, it's a sad reality, you know, that two Black people in America, that they related to the song so much. They're like calling 911 to come to this Black ghetto neighborhood is a joke.
And how relevant are those songs still today to so many
exactly.
people? That's the worst part. But, you know, you could almost make an argument that rap peaked with Public Enemy back in the late 80s. Like, those tracks there are not political tracks that are as important as them. With the Black Lives Matter movement, you can still just blare Fight the Power all day with the, you know, the people that want to do whatever today. All of these tracks are phenomenally realized, and I think the energy behind them is one of the underrated aspects of them. I talked about how I don't want to listen to them like as, you know, ear-biting music because they don't sound the same as like Kanye, but that's on purpose. They are aggressive for a reason.
Have you heard their 2020 remake of Fight the Power?
I haven't.
I listened to it, and it's, you know, it's same music, same, you know, funk, same style, but you just throw in all the updated examples of police brutality and, you know, Black men dying and Black women dying and being oppressed. Like, yeah, but you just substituted in for current events, and, you know, what's currently going on. So it was, you'll have to go check it out. Our listeners out there, you have to check out the 2020 version.
Please do. I have to check it out. And it's kind of sad that I have to today in 2020, but it is what it is. That's what, 30 something years later.
And but, we don't mean to be political in this episode at all, but I think, you know, part of this topic is somewhat political. You know, conscious rap is these guys making political statements and kind of making a stand with their art form.
Well, you know, that's kind of a point. Look, for my next pick, that's going to be a point that I talk about. It's Lupe Fiasco. And to me, he's like the ideal conscious rapper. And part of it is that he's made mistakes. He had a song called Bitch Bad. And he had this message in the song that was supposed to be empowering to women, and women did not like it at all. And, you know, it's kind of like Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson had like averaged 3 turnovers a game because he was putting out so much conscious, or he was putting out so many high level assists that every once in a while you throw one that doesn't work. And I think that happened to Lupe quite a bit earlier on in his career. But what we are still left with is a huge pile of immensely creative tracks. Almost every single one of them is conscious in some way or another, from his first album to his last one. His first huge song, well, no, his second huge song, his first one was Kick Push, but his first one that won a Grammy is Daydreaming, about being on the shoulders of a giant robot that personifies and walks around the hood. Like, this dude is out of this world. One of his most, like, obviously political songs from his first album is called American Terrorist. And in this song, Lupe Fiasco talks about, you know, everybody, and he kind of puts us all together into one track. And, you know, the song goes on from there to compare the plight of the white Ku Klux man and the black man in the hood, and how both of them have the same problem. It's the lack of green, and that's the color they both end up seeing. To me, just the way that, especially in all of his albums that aren't Lasers, because Lasers is kind of butt, but most of those albums, he's able to make these messages while telling a story. His second album, The Cool, is personifies the game and the streets and the cool. And I talked to my dad about this. It was the one thing we were able to agree on, is how the cool has been so destructive. This ideal of being cool as more important than anything else that pervades, you know, poor communities, especially poor communities with black people. And Lupe Fiasco, I listened to this album for years, but it didn't click for me until weeks ago, because this dude is brilliant. And that's an album that really stands the test of time. I've said that 1,000 times, but that's what matters with this. Most of the best conscious rap should stand the test of time. To me, Lupe Fiasco is a genius. And to top it all off, he can do any flow he wants to. His rhyme schemes are as good as anybody's, including Eminem. And Mural, his track that is like a piece of art, where he uses his wordplay to make a literal rap mural, is as good as any track ever invented. So Lupe Fiasco is probably at the top for me.
Nice. I didn't know that part about The Cool, but I really like that, because if you think about it, and, you know, I don't know if you could find anybody in America who doesn't think, like, black culture is just cool. Right. You know, rap is cool. Some of the things, like, you know, black movies and stuff, like, they're just cool people. Like, I think of guys like Will Smith and Ice Cube. Like, those guys are just cool. And I think that there's a temptation to overhype that, to like that being cool is what is most important, when it's not. So I think that's a very important distinction from some of the rap music that's out there that emphasizes this idea of like being cool versus the conscientiousness of, hey, that's not what matter. Like, we are cool because I can flow, but I'm raising humanity to another level because of some of the things that we can do. So I think that's the great point.
Right. I could go on forever. I hope all of you people listen to Lupe Fiasco. I think, so he's mainstream, but he's not high mainstream. And that's why I think part of the reason is because he is so conscious. But another, and this is weird, I just want to bring it up, I think Lupe's voice is missing a hardness. There's not that hardness to his voice that makes him, you know, cool for like somebody in the hood to listen to. In a way that like Kendrick has a similarly sort of nasally voice. I don't know how you describe it, but he's a little harder with it. And the way he raps is a little more aggressive. I think Lupe's missing that. But he's still, for sure, on that list for me. He would also be on my list of greatest hip-hop artists of all time. So when we get to that, look for it.
Nice.
Who you got, bro?
Okay, so and we both have Public Enemy, right? So that was your second? Mm-hmm. All right. So my second, I'll go ahead and talk about J. Cole. And I think as I make the transition here, the rest of my list is more modern rappers. And I think it's because, and I think the conscious rappers of the 80s and 90s will be proud at some of the, you know, proud of these guys and how they've transformed really. And the music that they put out, first and foremost, if the music that you put out can't compete, can't be played, you know, at a party or in clubs, then it doesn't matter. Your reach is limited. And J. Cole is one of those guys like, man, you just put his music on. You can work out to it. You can kind of just chill and vibe to it. His flow is so nice. I think just first and foremost, he's just a talented dude who takes his music and can make bangers and can make stuff you can vibe to, but also goes real deep with his stuff. I think why people like J. Cole, and I remember a conversation that you and I had a little while ago. I don't know if you remember. It's like he's relating to the everyday person, talking about, you know, his time in high school, about like just kind of kicking and hanging out. And I think people can easily just connect with him the way that he raps. He talks about regular people and their struggle. And I think that's what people like about him. I think that's what makes him, I think that's what got him popular, but then he took it deeper. And so before I get into it, I've got a couple of songs picked out, that I want to go through to kind of give you some, a sense of some of his music. But before I jump into that, do you have anything to say about J. Cole?
Yeah, I don't love J. Cole, but I appreciate and respect him as a rapper. To me, I feel like I've always felt like if I listened to J. Cole when I was younger, I probably would have been a big, big fan, but it's not really what I'm looking for now. And that's kept me from, because he's technically great and I think his beats are really good, but they're not like, I'm an old man now. And so I need something that's going to make me, that's going to really pique my interest. And he doesn't pique my interest, but I think it's like eating vegetables. Like J. Cole is vegetables. He's a good meal. He's always good to listen to. He's going to feed your soul. But my soul doesn't, I don't feel like my soul needs feeding much, so I don't listen to him really. But I definitely respect him. I respect his accolades, and I respect like a rapper like him is so big today. I think that's huge.
So getting into some of his songs, I think one of the things that he does the best is, you know, his overall message is to the everyday person out there. Be the best version of yourself and learn to love yourself and love your situation. And there's a song that he's got, Love Yours. You know, he talks about there's beauty in the struggle, and but he does it, and it's hard sometimes to sympathize with people who have a bunch of money who are writing a song about a struggle. But he paints a picture of how he's been there, and he says in there, you know, being broke was easier. And, you know, you first hear that and you're like, okay, whatever, I'll take that. Give me your money and I'll take your problems. But then he stops and takes a minute to say, I mean this genuinely. I was in your shoes. I was jumping from job to job trying to make it. I was broke. And the stuff I'm dealing with now, like being broke is easier. And so I think that kind of hit like everybody, or there's lots of people who say that, but I think he says it in that song a way that you actually,
I've heard that one. The way he says it is so far from a lot of rappers. Like, I think Jay-Z is one of the greatest rappers of all time. But this idea of, I think that Jay-Z sees himself as like a rapper for people to try to get, he raps so that people can try to get to where he's at. And I think it's honest, but it doesn't really work. Like, I love Watch the Throne, but the whole idea behind it, while they were in an economic downturn, is bogus. And I think J. Cole has been able to sort of thread that needle between being rich, but still rapping in a way that's sympathetic, but still honest to who he is and where he's at, that a lot of guys really struggle with.
Yeah, and I think part of it is because he points so much of his message like inward on the person listening. Mm-hmm. And that's what this song is about. Like, it's always going to be something else. There's always going to be, you know, material things that you don't have. But what matters is the people, you know, that love you and that are around you. Snow on the Bluff is another really good one. He shows off kind of like his lyricist. He kind of flexes and, you know, the speed in which he can and be in rhythm, I think is amazing. And, he says in the song, I'm summarizing, but like, he's painting a picture and he's talking about this educated, girl, who's kind of angry at some of the Black community. And he says, just cause you woke, and I'm not, don't mean you can talk to me like you're better than me. You know, how are you going to lead and talk about leading Black people? How are you going to lead when you're attacking the very same people, that really do need what you're saying? And he says in there that you got to treat people like children, in the sense that understanding, treat people like children, understanding that some of these things take time, love, and patience, you know, to be able to grow.
Yeah.
I got a couple more songs. I'll just mention one. I think For Your Eyes Only is one of those songs. There's an album, For Your Eyes Only, but on the album is a song called For Your Eyes Only. And it's one of those songs. It's long, but you sit down and it just gives you chills when you read it, because he's addressing mass incarceration and the cycle that mm-hmm. that kind of happens with Black men in a Black community.
I think that really speaks to you after reading that book recently, right?
Yeah, for sure. And he's talking about the new Jim Crow. That book. It's interesting. A couple of lines out of that, you know, and he's this guy wrote a poem and gave it to J. Cole and said, you know, if I die, read this to my daughter when she's ready. And so he's released this. So you assume that this, you know, he got caught up in the game and he's no longer there. But he addresses like one of the things about mass incarceration is the life of a felon. And he said, you know, I tried to find employment, even if it's wiping toilets, but these felonies be making life the hardest, and kind of painting this picture of what it's like to, even if you want to get out of the game, like once you have a felony, once you've made a mistake, it's really hard to get out. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I could go on and on, but I'll cut it, you know, there. That's just a couple of the songs. I think
that's part of it, right? Is that you want to go on and on. You
right.
Keep talking about it. He has this huge heap of songs that speak to you in so many different ways. And that's something that hip hop is really good at. I think firmly, this may ruffle some feathers. I'm happy Cody isn't here. But hip hop is maybe better at speaking straightforward to people about these issues than any other musical genre. Every genre has its benefits, you know, but I think hip hop is just really, really good at messages and being straightforward with that message, but also complex at the same time. So depending on the listener, you can get more or less out of it. And
for sure.
I think we may share somebody on our list, and they're really, really good at that. Maybe we should wait until last to talk about them. But that's what it sounds like. I need to give J. Cole another listen.
My brother is the reason that I dug into him, because I was a big Kendrick guy. Kendrick and J. Cole kind of came out and got popular around the same time. And I was like, I'm a Kendrick dude. but my brother had me go back and listen to some of these songs, and it's like, it's deep, man. He's real good.
Cool. Well, I'll give my next one, and it is KRS-One. I've mentioned him earlier. You know, KRS-One to me is probably the most, maybe not the most influential rapper, but I think the conscious hip hop, people look at him as the standard, and he has been setting that standard since the late 80s, still putting out tracks today, still putting out really, really good music. And he was touching on so many different types of subjects, from the streets to, you know, the issues that Black people were facing in these record labels. And in a way that made it not so that you were like, oh my God, they won't give KRS-One this money, but that these record labels are not only taking the money from these guys and putting them back on the street, but that they're putting out filth at, you know, such a high level. And KRS-One is... he has so much to say. He said so much. And except for Sprite once, he's never really sold out. He did do some Sprite commercials that people called out. But I haven't like listened to his whole catalog like 1,000 times through. But just a couple of the tracks, like the My Philosophy from 1988 and Sound of the Police from 93, I think are just, well, they, I don't think they are. I know they are classics. They're great tracks. I do listen to them every once in a while. And as far as just influential conscious rappers, to me, he's the prototype. He is the prototype of that. And he's one of the rappers that kind of wears it on his sleeve. He's not ashamed of being a conscious rapper. I think he is one of the ones that has that higher level of skill, that higher level of influence throughout the entire game, and who wears that badge like a uniform. So KRS-One is my number three.
And I think he kind of is on that line of, and out of, you can correct me if I'm wrong, and I, because I don't know his reach, like when he was popular, like if he was reaching the masses or if he was more underground. But I think he kind of, to me, seems like he's on that line of making something that is consumable for the masses. Like I played this while I was cleaning, as I was listening, you know, doing some research, and I was like, you know, head bobbing. I was like, okay, this dude can flow. He's got a nice little beat. Make me want to, you know, all of you out there, you've had a moment where you're sitting around with your friends and you guys are just freestyling. You know, it sounds terrible when you're doing something dumb, but you're just trying to make, and like, this is the guy's like, well, he's the best at it. He's perfected it. So yeah, I like this pick a lot.
Oh yeah, they weren't like crazy NWA popular, but they were pretty popular. And by they, I mean KRS-One and Boogie Down Productions, his book or his group from the 80s. So yeah, I think they did touch a lot of people. And I think earlier on, if you're one of the earlier rappers, I'm keeping Immortal Technique and Aesop Rock off my list. But I think in the 2000s, you're touching less people than those guys, even if they weren't the biggest rappers ever, were in the 80s. You know, those 80s rappers who were just the top 10 or top 20 most popular were at the foundation of hip hop as it is today. So I think they're a little more influential.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, I think he's a good transition. You said, you kind of mentioned, you know, him putting out these positive messages, talking about something real in the midst of all the garbage that goes out there in rap. And I love rap, mm-hmm. but I'll be the first to tell you that some of the stuff that's out there is just straight garbage. Just, right. You know, not worth listening to. It's, you know, it should be falling on deaf ears. And one of the guys that I put on my list is Lecrae. And because of the way
I made this list, I don't want to say I goaded you, but I was like, I wonder if LaRon's going to put Lecrae on here. Maybe I can make a list where LaRon will be able to talk about Lecrae as an introduction to you, Phil's, Bill's, Nannies, and Doe's out there.
Yes. It was a perfect segue. And I think what you said there, because Lecrae is, for those of you who don't know, he's a hip hop artist, and that distinction is very intentional. He's a hip hop artist, but he's a Christian. And there's this whole subgenre of hip hop music that's labeled as CHH, which is short for Christian hip hop. And back in the day, it was very Bible driven. So like the gospel rap, you know, type song. They're taking gospel music from churches and kind of making it rap, but it's still very heavily, you know, Bible-based lyrics. And something that Lecrae did is he's an interesting guy. He grew up in not a traditional, like, you know, he didn't grow up in church. His uncle, you know, he grew up, he didn't know his father because his father was, you know, kind of chasing drugs, addicted on drugs. And he grew up and his uncle was in a gang and kind of like, you know, gave him his first gun when he was a little kid. And so but then his grandmother, I mean, the story of so many young black men, you know, the grandmama's in church trying to pull you into church. And he always thought it was, you know, just for old people. And so when he later on in his life, when he, you know, became a Christian, he teetered on this, like, okay, this Christian hip hop that we're making, most of the people listening to it are, you know, white middle class kids that, you know, the parents won't let them listen to rap. So they'll let them listen to this Christian hip hop. And, you know, he, He said, this is not like, this isn't my background. This isn't who I want my music to reach the streets. And so what he did is he really, he elevated Christian hip hop in the sense of today, if you listen to some of the mainstream Christian hip hop, it really opened up this door where like, you don't have to, you know, talk about, or you don't have to say Jesus and God every other line for your music, for you to just push music that's positive and that, you know, is reaching the community. And that's what Lecrae did. And not only that, he was a crossover. So he wanted to make music with mainstream rap artists. He wanted to invite them in and challenge them to be better, to do better. He's got a song that's called Nothing. And he calls out everybody in the rap game. He's like, y'all ain't talking about nothing. He says, you know, you got these little homies in the hood regurgitating everything that you're saying. And he says in here, in every song talking about how they're selling work on every corner. Don't talk about the laws taking kids away from mamas. Don't talk about your homie in the trauma because he shot up. Or what about the young boy messing up the product? They don't talk about the bond money that they ain't have and everybody snitching everybody in the jam. They don't talk about the pain. They don't talk about the struggle. And he just goes on. It's like, you know, you guys are feeding them this money, clothes, cars, and, you know, girls, but you're not telling them about the realness. So I had to put him on my list because of that, just the way that he raised the game. He won a Grammy for his Anomaly album. Just a talented guy who did more than music, and his reach goes beyond more than music.
You know, I think when I think about Lecrae, and I haven't listened to him much, I feel like when I think about listening to him, envisioning myself listening to him, I'm inside of your car because that's where I've listened to most of his music. But I think of him like the perfect Christian rapper. And I know he tries to kind of get away from that label, but to me, the idea that he's putting forward is that it's more than just proselytizing. Like you said, it's more than just using those words and Bible verses over and over. Christians aren't called to just get people to the church, but also to feed the poor. And for Lecrae, the poor are the poor-minded, the people that need a message that's more than just bread. It's bread and fish and all of this good stuff. And I thought he'd always been really, especially since he's sort of switched over, I think. Didn't he do something like that? Like he sort of put the labeling off and just started, like you said, trying to reach whoever he could. And that's really powerful to me because Jesus did not just feed the hungry Christians or hungry Jews. He fed everybody that was hungry. And so from that perspective, I feel like he's more in line with what his religious stance is supposed to do. And that's really cool. And he's, you know, a really good rapper, which helps a lot. Because like a lot of those Christian rappers from the 2000s when it was getting kind of popular were bad.
And oh, yeah.
Even the ones that weren't bad, their beats were horrendous. They were just terrible. And he was one of the first ones that really sounded like he was trying to make music, not just Christian music. He was trying to do something, which I think whatever religion you are, you should be making whatever you're doing. It should be of the highest quality. So.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, he was on BET, how they do their ciphers, and, you know, mm-hmm. he killed it. Like, the dude's talented.
Yeah. Cool. I think both of our last choice has to be Kendrick Lamar. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He was one of the easiest choices. He was the first person I put on there after Andre 3000, who's not there anymore. But Kendrick Lamar feels almost like the reincarnation of Tupac, like it was supposed to happen. And to me, I guess I'll say this real quick because I know you want to talk about him. The coolest thing that Kendrick Lamar did was he made conscious songs that people listened to wanting it to be unconscious but still liked. Like Swimming Pool Drink. I remember I worked with a guy. I was working at a store, and he was like, man, I thought Kendrick Lamar was just another one of those college rappers, but I listened to that Swimming Pool Drink, and it's pretty hard. And, you know, that's precisely what conscious rappers, that's the ideal. I feel like he was Anakin Skywalker or Luke Skywalker. He was finally fulfilling this prophecy, the whole potential of this project, this artistic endeavor. An endeavor. He did it while making art, while making beautiful music. So
Yeah, and I think, but so man, we'll probably have to time ourselves when mm-hmm. we stop talking about Kendrick, because we could go all day about him and his albums, and we'll get more into that. But I think first, I kind of want to give like an honorable mention, a little bit more than an honorable mention, to Tupac, and to where he partway makes this list with Kendrick because of, like you said, Kendrick is kind of like the reincarnated Tupac. The world at the time, society, I don't know if they were really ready for what Tupac brought. And this is kind of with Kendrick. He's, like I said, we talked about Tupac a little earlier about him being a father figure. One of the things that Kendrick in the interview, Kendrick said that Tupac taught him how to be vulnerable in his music. And how that vulnerability can reach and make an impact, on people. I think, you know, the way that Tupac, you know, some of his songs, and the way that he went in, with his music and his approach. I didn't know that he was born. Do you know that his name was changed when he was one? Like, yeah. You know, I didn't mm-hmm. even know that, but like Tupac was almost destined to usher in this wave of conscious rappers, or this kind of like this ideology that we need to lift the Black community up above the standards that we currently exist in. And I think that since him, that's what these guys have been trying to do. So moving into Kendrick, I've got a couple of songs from Good Kid, Mad City and To Pimp a Butterfly. Is there any that you wanted to point out before those albums?
Sing About Me, I'm Dying of Thirst is a pure masterpiece to me. It's the song from, three perspectives where he's rapping from three different perspectives of people who are kind of looking back at him. The way that he's able to affect these people's lives, but also this intense sadness from these people. The way it ends with his grandmother offering this healing water on their forehead and a prayer. Sets almost the stage for who Kendrick has become since then. I thought it was the perfect ending to that album, or sort of like emotional ending. But he has so many tracks. I'll let you seem really prepared with this, so let's go.
Yeah, and we'll definitely just have to go back and forth, because we've had so many conversations about just how great his albums are. And one of the things, you mentioned that song, you know, and if you go out and listen to this song, I think one of the things that you have to prepare yourself for is he doesn't shy away from, you know, vulgarness, because that's right. A part of the experience of, you know, of people, of the lives of so many youth or young, you know, Blacks in that are on the streets or that live in the ghettos, that have to, that's a part of the culture. And I think, you know, for some that might be a shock factor, like, oh my gosh, he said this word, and oh, he said this word. But if you get past that, you know, for me, profanity is, you know, profanity for profanity's sake. I always say, like, you know, what's the point? You know, what value, what meaning did that add? But with his music, you have to get past that to see, like, and you know, he talks about that in one of his, in his debut album, it was his mixtape, and where he's talking about, you know, people wanna, how can I talk about, you know, God, money, clothes, girls, and all in the same sentence. And he's just being me. He's bringing in himself to his music. And I think that's important. And Cam, I don't know if you have the same opinion, but I think Good Kid, Mad City is probably one of the greatest albums that just tells a story. That's like a movie. Like, you could almost, when you're listening to the song, it's like watching a movie almost.
Mm-hmm. It feels like it could be almost like a 90s, more serious counterpart to Friday, or it could be the 2010s version of Boys in the Hood, except for with a slightly more happy ending for Kendrick, at least. It's a lot like a 2010s Boys in the Hood. I think if there's any issue I've had with Kendrick, it is in Good Kid, Mad City, the way that it's staged. I feel like Kendrick sets himself apart so much, and it's, you know, peer pressure on him. It's these things that occur to him. But I think the way he does it makes you really empathize with his position and makes it easier for you to put yourself in his shoes for somebody that is going through similar things. But yeah, I can almost picture it. You know, I can picture it starting with him at Shireen's house, Master yeah. Splinter's daughter, and ending with them almost doing this thing and coming back for, you know, to his grandmother, what might have been. I can't think of a album that does that quite so well. I think you're right.
Yeah. And to follow directly after the songs that you mentioned, so it's a two-part of the Sing About Me and Dying for Thirst, is real. And I think that it really just kind of summarizes the album. In his first verse, he's talking about women being vain, pursuing love through destructive relationships. In the second verse, he's talking about, you know, one of his friends that's just consumed by the hood mentality. And the song encourages the youth to be real, to not buy into some of the fake stuff that they're being fed in their environment. And I think that's kind of what the point of the album is, like, you know, the moral of the story. And that song ends with, you know, a message from his mom. So his mom is trying to call him and they're leaving voicemails and, you know, 'cause he's not picking up. And she says, you know, if I don't hear you by tomorrow, I hope you come back and learn from your mistakes. Come back a man, tell your story to these black and brown kids in Compton. Let them know you was just like them, but you still rose up from the dark places of violence, becoming a positive person. And she says, when you do make it, give back with your words of encouragement. And I think that it was such a perfect introduction album to who he was and what he was going to bring in some of his later albums.
No, it's from top to bottom one of the most, and he did, so it's one of the, let me get back to my thoughts. It's from top to bottom one of the most complete concept albums I've ever seen, like a movie, but tracks in it individually can act like completely different things when heard out of that context, which is what let Kendrick Lamar become so accessible. For instance, what was the track where he's kind of like freestyling, and the way he's freestyling is more backseat freestyle. That's what it's called.
Yeah.
And you know, the track, the way it's laid out in the album is that Kendrick Lamar is being asked by his friends, this peer pressure, to spit a hot verse. And so this is what he does. It's almost, it's like you said, it's not real. It's a farce. It's what he's supposed to sound like. And then it, and so anybody that heard that track probably heard it initially and were like, that's hard. That's dope. You know?
Yep.
And, but when they actually dig into the album, they get this, the context behind it, which lets them understand more of where he's coming from. And I think there's like two ways to look at that. The first is kind of what we've been talking about, that people that are in that situation are able to look at Kendrick and see an example of how they can become a good and positive person. But also people that aren't in that situation, you know, my childhood was nowhere near that dangerous and that volatile, but I can empathize with people in that situation a lot more through his music.
For sure. Anything else to say about Good Kid, M.A.A.d City? Because we got to leave some space to talk about To Pimp a Butterfly.
To Pimp a Butterfly it is. Let's go.
So I think that this is, and I'm not a rap connoisseur. So, you know, some of you out there that are listening, you know, you can come on and educate me. But I truly think that To Pimp a Butterfly is the best rap album that was ever made. I think that it encapsulates Black culture and Black history in America so well. And it's different than Good Kid, M.A.A. City because it's not so much telling a story, but it's almost like taking the, you know, the consumer, the listener through the transformation, like as you develop through the song or through the album. Cam, what are your thoughts about To Pimp a Butterfly before we talk about some of the individual songs?
I wouldn't go so far as to say it is the greatest rap album of all time, but I think it's definitely one of them. And it would have a really good argument to make it to my top four. It's that great. I think musically, Kendrick Lamar did a coup when he was able to get Kamasi Washington and Thundercat to really contribute to the album. And that jazz sound, that sort of new age jazz with those rap beats, makes it feel like it's an album that could have just as easy belonged in the 70s or 80s as it does today, or even the 60s, which makes those tracks with subjects that, like the music, could be just as important in the 60s and 70s as today, and probably tomorrow. Well, hopefully not tomorrow, but probably tomorrow.
Right.
Come through so well. I think it's not quite as cohesive as Good Kid, M.A.A.d City, but track for track, there's probably more really, really great tracks. I love the ending. And it's hard to find any fault with the album. It's it's one of the more artistically ambitious hip-hop albums of the last 20, 30 years. It's hard to, you could harp on about it forever. I guess if I had to have a favorite track from it, it would probably be How Much a Dollar Costs with James Fauntleroy and Ronald Isley, which is sort of his, and this is universal, but I think the idea is Christian in nature, this idea of an angel or God. If they ask you for money, what would you give them? A dollar? Would you spare this change? And that denying it to the smallest of us is akin to denying it to the largest of us. This idea is also found in, you know, Greek mythology, this idea of xenia, that you're supposed to treat any possible visitor to your home with love. But the real core of it is the core of a person that would deny that to somebody so small, and who Kendrick is, who Lucy, as described in this album, is trying to get Kendrick to be, who he might be. It's a powerful, powerful song, but it also sounds fantastic. And that's one of the things that rappers, even one of my favorites, Lupe Fiasco, doesn't have songs that sound like this. It's not just, it's the rapping, it's the music, it's the features. J. Cole, you know, gets all the love, and I respect it. But I think features are an important part of music in general. It's putting more than one voice together to make something more powerful. And Kendrick is as good as that as anybody. And How Much a Dollar Cost is one of the great songs. Ronald Isley's voice at the end is haunting. It's hauntingly powerful. Yep. Shout out.
Go ahead.
Oh, shout out to Lincoln Heights. He grew up there. That's where my dad grew up too. And he was friends with my uncles. But go ahead.
That's crazy. I think, you know, lots of people make songs about, you know, giving money to the poor and not giving money to the poor, and kind of like what that looks like. I think something that's really interesting that he does in that song particularly is that he talks about the anger that rises up in him, right? So he walks by the dude who is asking for a dollar. He doesn't give it to him, and the homeless man just stares at him. And so he gets in his car and he watches this man stare at him, and anger rises up in him. And he's talking to himself like, what does he expect me to save him? Like, you know, who is he? Like, I worked for everything I got. I need, you know, my crumbs. I need all of them. But then a deeper reflection of how greed has kind of took a hold of him, even in this, you know, heightened sense of like, I've gotten this money and I'm trying to make this impact, but wow, I still have this greed and I still struggle with that.
And I think he makes it, this could be something that really happened, or it could just be a story that he came up with, but either of them seem equally as powerful. And the fact that he put it in song is what makes it work so well. It comes alive no matter what happened. That's the power of song. It really, really comes alive in a way that, you know, it might not in a book. I guess another track is Institutionalized, which is right after King Kunta, I think. And it's this idea that Kendrick Lamar tried to change into somebody else, but these institutions have kept him and whoever in this same mindset, this idea that he's trapped. And it's kind of the idea throughout the album of this caterpillar, which he really expands upon at the end, but the caterpillar who have all these expectations on them and stays as a caterpillar. That's part of it too, is just that the whole idea of the album comes together in these disparate, different tracks. In a way that isn't as solid as Good Kid, Mad City, but maybe more powerful. How do you feel about Institutionalized?
It's good, and I think that you mentioned that King Kunta Institutionalized, which I think is interesting as it goes into You and All Right, like the progression of the songs. I think the flow of the album works really well, yeah. And I think lots of people talk about, and I even mentioned this earlier, J. Cole mentioning about like the struggle, but you're rich. So it's like hard for us to sympathize with you. But I think, you know, Kendrick in the song You does it better than anyone I've ever heard. And just in his voice, like you can,
right.
It's like nobody, if he's not in pain or if he's not in struggle, then he's the world's greatest actor of all time. Like you can hear it in his voice, the way he's talking about, you know, and he even mentions that like the inner him you know, he has suicidal thoughts. And again, with that vulnerability, and I think, but then leading into All Right, a song that, like, so you're like taken through this emotional stuff, like about, you know, slavery and, you know, in the institutions, oppressing, black people. Then you go into the struggle that he is in, but then you get to All Right. And it's like, I think a big part of black culture, is this sense of, you know, and from the movie The Color Purple, you know, all's my life I had to fight. And that's how he starts right. the song. And then he's like, I'm messed up, you're messed up, but if God got us, homie, we gonna be all right.
It's catharsis.
It just bangs. It's like, yes, we gonna be all right.
I swear, I got that album like a week after it came out and was just blaring it in my car like crazy. It's just, it feels so good, right? But it plays a very important part in the narrative of the album. It's not, it's cathartic, but it's not purely so. It's also what we have to be at. It's the idea that this catharsis is sort of violent in nature, and that it's for this reason. It's because we are in this situation, that illusion of the color purple. We're still like the color purple, and we still need this track, right?
Yeah. And did you, so I want to talk about Mortal Man for a hot second, but was there any other tracks that you wanted to talk about?
No, let's go to Mortal Man. That's one of the more interesting tracks. One of the more divisive one too, especially with the Michael Jackson shout out.
I think that, you know, I mentioned one of J. Cole's songs you listen to and you get chills. And after listening, and I think that it's just a beautiful piece of art that, you know, Kendrick put together with this album and bringing it in at the end. He starts off, you know, with, he's talking, he's doing a ghost interview with Tupac. So, right, he has this interview, this old interview, and he's like talking to Tupac, and he starts it off by reading him this poem. I'm going to read it for you guys because I think it's really cool. And if you go back and listen to the album, each line he, you know, either starts a song. So like, you know, after the first song of the album, he goes into the beginning of his poem. And then in between every song, he repeats the poem that leads all the way up into the end. And it's like, when you see that being tied in to the whole song, and then it goes straight mm-hmm. into the interview, he like asked Tupac, like, what you think about that? And Tupac starts talking, and it's crazy.
It's the first time you hear that. It's just like, oh my God, is that actually Tupac? And it is. And it's so powerful to hear that voice. It feels like a passing of the torch to some extent, especially because he brings another poem. I don't know if it's the same one or a continuation or what. But after that interview with Tupac, he says another poem, and Tupac does not respond at the end, as if the way I've interpreted that is that he doesn't respond because he's done. You know, this is Kendrick's time now. Kendrick, this is his poem. This is his idea, and it's his chance to influence the culture and influence Black people across the world, especially across America. How did you interpret that ending?
Yeah, the ending, it really takes you, it finishes the transformation because it's so beautifully put about how, you know, you start the butterfly or the caterpillar goes into the, you know, he eats and he's just eating, and then he goes into this cocoon and it changes him. It is, when he comes out the butterfly, he is not the same as before he was. And it talks about this transformation. That's why I just think it's so beautiful and so eloquently put. Like, you wouldn't think that a rap album could do that and accomplish that.
For sure. It's why he's for sure on the list. Maybe he could have been elevated. Because,
and if that wasn't enough, you've got him. He is the artist that put together, you know, the movement of our time, or like the cinematic movement of our time in Black Panther. Kendrick mm-hmm. Lamar was responsible for putting together the, you know, the Black Panther inspired album. So it's like, this dude,
instant classics. That. Every, you know, a lot of people try to turn albums into instant classics, and they all aren't. But I say all of Kendrick Lamar's, especially his first two, Good Kid, Mad City and To Pimp a Butterfly, were instant classics. And any struggle to name them as such was wrong, for sure. So he is definitely. We appreciate you. We appreciate your consciousness, and we appreciate that he was able to, you know, he's completely mainstream. People are still waiting for that album, Untitled Unmastered. We need to finish this up, peoples, but Untitled Unmastered is one of my favorite stories ever. how he was performing all these crazy deep cut tracks on different like night shows and in award shows all across the world. And LeBron James was like, we need that album on Instagram. And a couple of days later, the album released.
Yeah, yeah, it was crazy. Right before the playoffs started.
Right. So I think he kind of, I don't think he's the best rapper ever, but he may be the greatest. And he may be the greatest conscious rapper ever. And I think maybe to kind of dot the I, it's hard to be a great rapper without being conscious. A lot of guys that could be on this list, Ghetto Boys, if we're talking honorable mentions, Ghetto Boys are one of the great ones who did not make the list for me. A Tribe Called Quest, Lauryn Hill, The Roots for sure. The Roots are great, but you know, they've been on Jimmy Kimmel for the last 10 years. So Black Star, that's Mos Def and Talib Kweli. Killer Mike, and my last one is Lil B the Bass God.
Oh my gosh.
Who you got for honorable mention?
The only guy that I, or the only group I would say that I have on here that we haven't touched on is NWA. I think they were a little bit harder for people to consume because they were more in your face, a little bit more, you know, I won't say vulgar, but just, you know, kind of blunt with their message. But I think definitely a lot of people, and especially, you know, Black men in the streets, and when I mean in the streets, I don't even necessarily mean like into drugs. I just mean, you know, in their community, having to fight against the oppressive nature of police brutality and the way that our society made it difficult in the cycle that they found themselves caught in. I think they had to get a shout out, you know, in my books. They're a lot more promote violence more than you would probably want your conscious rapper to do, but I think they deserve a shout out because part of the violence is not violence for violence sake, but violence as a response to, it's a natural human response to being
it's oppressed. More militant than violent, I think.
Right. So yeah, that's all I got for honorable mentions.
Cool. Well, that is it, man. I hope you guys have loved LeBron. He's going to be on the podcast from here on out. I don't know if every episode will have all three of us, but plenty of them will. And this is a couple months before it will be released, but we are planning a Pokemon series, and that is going to be awesome. Fully on Pokemon, me, LeBron, Cody, all of us are going to be in it. Look forward to that. Look forward to the future of this podcast. LeBron, you got anything to say, man?
So glad to be joining you guys. This was a lot of fun. You guys get out there and tell us, hit us up on Facebook, social media. Tell us what you think. What did we miss? Tell us why.
Cool. That's it. You hip hop heads out there. Thank you for listening. Phil's, Bills, Nannies and Doles. It's always great. Stay great and bleed on.